Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Pensacola, Florida, you're listening to Core Dialogues Radio, presented by ID Group, where thought-provoking conversations and thought leaders meet on the air. Every Thursday at 4 p.m., we hit the airwaves with forward-thinking ideas, philosophies, and questions, connecting our listeners to ideas that will get you thinking. The answers are in our studio. Now, here's your host and whole systems branding expert, Dr. Mona.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's edition of Core Dialogues Radio. We're streaming, as we do every week, live from the Business Radio studio here in beautiful and rainy right now, downtown Pensacola, Florida. I'm Mona Amadeo, and every Thursday we meet here at 4 o'clock Central to connect you with some really interesting people. You can find us live at Core Dialogues at businessradiox.com. And again, that's Core Dialogues with an S at businessradiox.com. And so each week we gather here to connect you with some people and some ideas that we hope will inspire you, challenge you, and motivate you. And as you've heard me say before, we believe that stories about organizations and the people in them have a power to impact the world in a very, very positive way. So each week we're sharing those stories from people who are using their talents to make a real difference in the world. And Corey Blake is one of those people, and I am just so excited to have Corey here because I think he really exemplifies what the show is all about. Corey and his brainchild, Roundtable Companies, creates meaningful connections through storytelling, something that he and I both share a passion around. And today we're turning the tables a little bit. And Corey, we're going to have Corey tell us his story versus usually he's trying to get other people to help other people tell their story. And I have to tell you, I think you're going to find this really interesting because anyone who wears a T-shirt with the slogan "Vulnerability is sexy" has a very interesting story to tell. And I think one that we will all be very interested to hear. So just a little bit about Corey and his life's journey. It's taken him from the stage to a career in L.A. as an award-winning commercial and voiceover talent, working with Fortune 500 and Fortune 100 companies. He's also been a film producer, a director, an author, and publisher, and now as the founder and president of Roundtable Companies, Writers of the Roundtable, which I love, and Writers of the Roundtable Press. All of these companies have a central theme in mind. It is really about the power of stories, to help people find their own purpose and passion in life, but also the stories of organizations and how those stories can be used to really connect with the world. And stories are powerful, and Corey and his team are just experts at helping uncover those stories and tell those stories. So first, Corey, welcome to Core Dialogues Radio. We're happy to have you here.
Thank you so much. I have this huge smile on my face. You've made me sound very impressive. Thank you.
Well, you are impressive. So, Corey, just to kick things off, like I said, we're just going to let this go where it goes. But I'd like to just kick things off with maybe you could connect the dots a little bit for us and tell us, how does a person get from the stage, you have a BFA, fine arts, you know, acting, all those things, to wearing this T-shirt? And if you go to your website, you'll see on there he's wearing this T-shirt that says, "Vulnerability is sexy." So tell us the story, Corey. How do you get from the stage to the T-shirt?
Oh, dear. thank you for the question. Well, I went to Hollywood and I pursued a career in acting because I believed that I had something magnificent to contribute to the world. And I thought at the time that creating a platform as an actor was the way that that was going to materialize in my life. And I enjoyed acting for quite some time, especially in Hollywood. It was a lot of fun, certainly in the beginning. I was blessed to be in one of the commercials that's been named one of the 50 best Super Bowl commercials of all time, a Mountain Dew spot. I've been in a really outrageous award-winning commercial where I'm playing basketball in the nude. And
oh, wow.
Oh, it's hilarious. Got my picture in Sports Illustrated for that one. So like, I've been a part of some really fun and exciting projects, and then on plenty of television shows and whatnot. But ultimately, I reached a point where I kind of started feeling like, I wasn't living my purpose. My talents were being used essentially to sell more sugar water to children, or, you know, I was participating in television shows, but in a way where I was walking onto someone else's set, someone else's family, and I might hang around for 2 or 3 days, but I was transient and I didn't feel like I was belonging. And so while everyone around me was saying I was really living the dream for all of us, my friends, certainly my mother, you know, who really identified me as an actor. And yet I felt relatively invisible in the industry, even though I was one of my friends who was making a full-time living as an actor and sometimes getting paid really well. So I had to reconcile that gap, and ultimately decided I needed to leave LA. And that was a really challenging 2 to 3 year transition of me trying to determine if I'm not an actor, who am I? It was
identity,
such
a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, it was such a core piece of who I was, and the absence of that was a very confusing period of time. But out of necessity to find something else to do, I started Writers of the Round Table as a conduit between business people and writers. And it was something that came very natural and easy to me, to be someone who could get the most out of the artistic talent and also who could help exceed expectations from the business side. And then because of my Hollywood background, I was quickly, thankfully, sought after to use my storytelling capabilities to support people with books. Mm-hmm. And that became a pretty huge passion, to use the hero's journey to support coaches, consultants, and CEOs on their transformational work that they do in the world. And I think what I found during that pretty intense period of time working on a lot of books was that ultimately what we were delivering was transformation through storytelling. And it just so happened we were also packaging it in a book. And so the transformation piece is what we continued to explore as an organization and find ways to deliver outside of just the book. And storytelling was always the driver in all of that. And vulnerability was a huge and important key. How could we create a space where our client felt safe enough to show who they really were? And how could we create concentric circles of safety so that they could push into that until they had the confidence to be fully exposed to the world? And I'll tell you, my impression of it throughout that journey was always when someone leaned into vulnerability, I felt close to them. I felt deeply connected. I felt turned on and alive. And that's really where this notion of vulnerability being sexy was born.
Yeah, great, great concept. You know, and I think what's so interesting that about your work is that the depth of it. You know, so many people tell the story everyone wants to hear, but I really believe your passion seems to be about telling the story that needs to be told. And as I've looked at your work and the work of your team, that seems a clear difference between some of the things other people are doing.
Thank you for acknowledging that. It feels really good. I think I have the belief that when we write from our head and share our knowledge, we attract a lot more of the same. And that's a missed opportunity when it comes to sharing of ourselves to leap into something profound and new. And when we explore the intersections of where we've been in life, we're able to more easily help other people to understand how the universe has delivered us into this new opportunity, this new possibility. And that's a place that I love to support people in living into and emerging into, because it's where I'm most alive myself.
Yeah, and I wonder that. So as you've kind of created this process, you know, how did your own story, how did this emerge from your own experiences and your own story? Did you live this yourself and then you brought it to the forefront? Did you discover it through bringing it to the forefront, or did you have some aha moment that said, ah, this is the way it needs to be done? Help me understand how you get, again, from, again, a voiceover talent, a very successful individual, to this ability to help people get in touch with some things that it's quite frankly scary and at times difficult. What did your own journey, how did your own journey inform that process?
Well, when I was in Hollywood, I had big dreams and ultimately found myself in a place where I felt terribly alone, especially that that dichotomy between what the world saw of me and how I felt on the inside. And that loneliness was cancerous to my spirit. I mean, it was really destructive for quite a few years. And at a very subconscious level, when I formed Round Table and we were invited to use storytelling as a vehicle, I was solving that challenge for other people that no one, that I didn't have support for when I was in Hollywood. And that was the loneliness piece. Mm-hmm. We're very family oriented. The notion of how do I surround someone with a tremendous amount of love and non-judgment as they are emerging into something new. And that really is informed by the lack of that kind of support that I had, and recognizing when we want to do amazing things in the world, the hero's journey says we're going to come up against our own awesome resistance. And coming up against that alone, I was not able to get through at an earlier part of my life. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've really set out to solve.
And yeah, so what your own challenges then birth in many ways, the space that you're creating for people.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, yeah. So it was interesting as you were talking. There is a famous writer, therapist, psychology person named Goffman, and Goffman talked a lot about something called front stage and backstage. And so, as you're saying, there's the act, the performance, and being a performer, you understand this, that goes on in front of the audience. And then there's all the craziness that happens in the backstage, right? And so a lot of what you're doing is helping people kind of bring some of that backstage forward, it sounds.
I love that. I haven't heard that before. And yes, that does resonate. It also brings forward for me the earliest in my career when I first studied acting in college. I studied the Stanislavski method, which my experience of was very formulaic. It was how do we break down scenes within scripts so they're repeatable. And then when I moved to LA, I studied the Meisner technique of acting, which strips away languages and is all about the truth of our energy. And I got so addicted to that truth and authenticity piece and carried that over into this work with businesses, because I found so much life in that space of aligning our language with our truth.
So talk to me a little bit about that. As I'm listening to you, certainly I can see, you know, individuals in going through some transformation through their own storytelling individually. Tell me how that's translated to business. What are you doing and what are you seeing within the world of business?
Well, I'll give you an example. As I was just in Vegas at a conference, and the name of the conference was called Brave Souls, and it was the conference organizers wanted to explore this notion of bravery, and I commend them for it. It is just a wonderful topic to be pushing into. My experience of it, though, was that bravery is such a challenging thing to ask for in the business world. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was received with a lot of formulaic fake smiles, like, here's how we do things. We welcome you with a big grin on our face. We look at your name tag and we say your name aloud. Like, this is the things we do. But then as soon as I tried to get real with certain people who were approaching me from that space, I felt them want to run out the door. That is frequently what I experience in business, that there is this notion that intimacy is for our spouse And that's the only person that we really share what we believe and what we feel. And everyone else gets one, maybe two dimensions of us if we really trust them. And I come from another side of that polarity, and I've always found the most joy in the deepest forms of connection. And so when it comes to supporting business leaders, helping them to approach their work more wholly, to be willing to share internally and externally what they stand for in a way that will attract those who are most intended to work with them and who are on fire to be in the sandbox with them, while it will repel those who are not. That's new for business, at least for the people that I tend to attract. There's a notion that I mostly see in business of we're supposed to try to appeal to everybody. And as a result, there's just a lot of mediocrity in connection. So I'm just infatuated with and in love with supporting the people who have the courage in business to be bold and expressive and share their poetry so that the world can meet them where they are and help them go where they have the potential to go.
So what happens, you know, we talk a lot, and in today's business world, this climate, the concept of trust, authenticity, are words you hear a lot, but you know, I think I'm agreeing with you that to get there is not so easy. And we know that if we think in terms of teams working together, the foundational piece of that is trust. And so it feels like part of what you're doing within the organization is building, I like your language where you talk about safe places where people can learn to trust, because trust isn't something that just, you know, springs forth. It's something that is earned and developed. So is that part of, is some of your work around that, just the team piece of this?
Well, I love work around core values. It's a huge passion of mine. And I think that's where the team plays a very integral role. But I think most expressions of core values that people frame and hang on the wall, I call them corporate garbage.
Yeah, most of them are.
You know, they aren't lived within the organization. They're not part of the decision-making process. They just look good on the wall to say, this is what we stand for. And that is such a missed opportunity for core value alignment, for, you know, to get everyone pulling the rope in the same direction within an organization. Organizations are so powerful when they live in alignment and when they're willing to step away from either the people or the processes that are not in alignment with what they say they stand for. And it helps remove the emotion from decisions. When you have a true north compass and you can go to your values and say, what do our values say regarding this question or this challenge that we're facing? It makes things very black and white and easy to determine. Like, I'll give you an example. Brilliance is a core value at RTC. Mm-hmm. And that brilliance, we define it as it has to capture the magic of a client. It's very easy for then a staff member to come to me and say, Corey, is this ready to go to a client? And I can look at it and go, do I feel the magic or not? And if not, back to the drawing board, let's go do some more work, because it doesn't meet our core values. Before that, before brilliance was a core value, I had to make an emotional judgment call that essentially amounted to, is it good enough?
Yeah.
That's a very different question than does it have the magic?
So when you're working with organizations and you're working with leaders, how do you get them engaged in this? What are the type of people you're seeing who are engaging and are using this openness and this connection to the core, really, to move the organizations forward? Tell me a little bit about organizations that are doing that, or is it still so cutting edge that it's still in process? Because it is new, Corey.
Well, so we've got a client right now that's been doing this for 30 years, but here's the thing. I think my experience of these organizations that have been doing this for a longer period of time is that they've also, when you work on yourself or your organization from a personal development standpoint, there's a lot of sublimation of ego. And then when you don't have the ego, the picking up of the microphone doesn't happen. And therefore, they're not telling the world about this profound work that they're doing. Mm-hmm. But there are some that have been doing this for quite some time. For the most part, I'm seeing people, a lot of CEOs that are really curious, but still terrified in this space. And I would say that this work is quite polarizing. It demands the response of either, okay, I'm going to be courageous and I'm going to step into this with excitement and joy and energy, or I'm going to run the hell away from it. And I see certainly plenty of running the hell away from it. But I think to answer your question, the ones that I'm seeing come forward are kind of the businesses that are in that conscious space, whether they are conscious capitalists or whether they operate that way, maybe without the label. They're people that have been expressing their organizations in this kind of a way intuitively. And when suddenly they come across what we do, we help give them the language for something they've believed for quite some time, but haven't necessarily been able to express and certainly haven't been able to share with the outside world.
So when you're looking at those companies, I'm involved with something called the Center for Values-Driven Leadership. And actually, you're part of the world in Chicago, outside of Chicago, at Benedictine University. And, you know, they've done some research on smaller companies who are really live and try to live by those values. And they're a huge positive, what most people would think in terms of bottom line drivers of organizations that do this, specifically things like increased engagement, increased commitment, productivity. There are many outcomes of places where people feel they can bring their values to work. Are you seeing that in the work that you're doing?
I see it in a very anecdotal way. Raj Sisodia actually has a wonderful presentation around conscious capitalism that is full of the data that you're talking about that demonstrates the triple bottom line impact and how much more successfully companies that are conscious perform. We certainly see in our space, we see more happiness. We see more more loving. I'm sorry?
It's a joy.
Yeah, we do. We do. We see more connection. We see staff members that want to stay longer. We see clients that feel that tie their own identity to the organization's identity, right? So there's just long-term loyalty, ambassadorship. So I certainly see some pretty profound results. But I also do, you know, to be totally candid, I also watch people first have to take steps backwards, because the shift of identity, oftentimes what we'll see first is the pain of renegotiating an identity. So we have to be working with someone who has enough courage to move through some of those challenges, some of those questions that pop up when you aren't met beautifully at first, while you're still figuring out this new identity. I mean, we're attracting people who in many senses are like a teenager who's renegotiating their relationship with their parents. Mm. It's not easy. It's not simple, and it's never straightforward. So they're opting into it, you know, at the stage of life that they're coming to us. So it oftentimes is this full expression of adult development in terms of how the world is receiving them. And that includes profound pain and profound joy when it's broken through.
Right. Yeah. I hear where you're coming from. So as we're looking at your journey, your path, RTCs, tell me what is it that gives you the most joy as you're working day in and day out? I mean, it's a business, right? But what is it that gives you the most joy?
I get bored very quickly. So if I'm not developing and increasing my own capacity, I'm kind of a pain around my company. So it's important that I be living what it is that we preach to our clients. So I receive just a tremendous amount of joy and satisfaction from being in the individual moments during a day where I have the option to choose to live into a value or not. And being in that awareness and making that choice, or watching where I'm not able to, and being reflective of that. But I think right now one of the big drivers for me is that the organization is much more self-sustaining. We have a president in place now, which frees me up to share what we've learned with the world and actually inhabit that thought leadership space, which is awesome and terrifying all at the same time. And so I'm in that space of managing both the pain and the challenge while living into greater amounts of capacity and joy. It's pretty awesome most of the time. I'll say that I feel blessed most of the time, even in those moments when the universe is teaching me lessons I hadn't planned on.
Oh, so nicely said.
Thank you.
I absolutely understand that. The universe has a way of teaching you what you need to know, doesn't it?
Oh, man. Well, I'm so grateful for the lessons, but yeah, as an example, like I was in Vegas last week giving 5 different kinds of presentations over 3 days, and the intensity of it had me recognizing that because I do something that's polarizing from the stage, I mean, I can literally feel the percentage of the audience that is so excited about this work. At the same time, I have to manage the percentage of the audience that really dislikes me for bringing up these feelings in them, right? So I'm in that space that I hadn't considered of how do I manage that and not take it personally and not overly adjust or not water things down to make more people comfortable? How do I be okay with the fact that the audience is all in different places?
Yep. Yep.
I didn't realize I was going to have to learn that in this
hard.
Way.
I just want everyone to love you. You know, I mean, that we all
yeah.
And to be, especially a performer, right? I mean, that as your background is. You know, that's my... a question for you too. How do you know when people are ready? Because as you said, we are maybe programmed, we are to give right answers, we're programmed to kind of go along. How do you know when someone is really ready to engage with the work that you do?
So there's this a part of me that wants to say no one's ever ready, and some people choose to do it anyway, which is kind of the camp that I often fall in. But in reality, there are some signs that someone is ready for our process. If we have a client who hasn't done a fair amount of personal development work, then their toolkit is just not well equipped enough oftentimes to manage the fear with the kind of grace that I want my employees to feel from a client. So if I've got someone who has some trauma from their past that really hasn't been managed and has just been buried, then when their stuff comes up, as inevitably it will, they may be quick to anger. And it's very important to me to not expose my staff to having to be in that therapeutic space. My staff are not trained healers. They're trained listeners and reflectors, but it's very different. So I do have to be careful with trying to determine where is someone at in their life and have they done enough of their own work that they can approach their challenges at least from a neutral space, if not a graceful space, so that we're just protecting our people from being vomited on with really negative energy when people meet their stuff. I mean, if they don't have that capability, it's easy to blame our company for some of the feelings they might be experiencing.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense to me. Well, as we kind of close out here, one of the things I want to make sure that we do is to connect you with people who are interested in connecting with you. I know one of the cool things that you do is this storytelling workshop. That you do. I don't know if you do it a couple times a year, once a year, but tell us a little bit about that, what it is, and who would be the best people to show up at that.
Thank you so much for that invitation. Yeah, we usually do one or two of these a year. This year we're doing one in Yosemite. Next year we're doing one in Mexico. The one in Yosemite is coming up in October, and they're usually 4 or 5 days. A fairly immersive experience, removing people from all of the traditional demands of life and inviting them into that safe space of exploration to ask questions around identity and start to find the language that expresses who they are so that they can be seen in the world in greater ways. It's a core values work. It's storytelling work. But ultimately, it is a safe place for that kind of exploration for anyone who feels like they're meant to let go of an old story and emerge into a new one.
That's nicely said. And how do they find that, Corey?
They can actually go to our website, the navigation bar. On any page of our website at the top, there's a storytelling retreat section of the site that features Yosemite right now.
Okay, that's great. And is there anything else, any other way that people can connect with you, learn more about you, what you guys are doing at RTC?
I mean, certainly people can go to roundtablecompanies.com. We have a wonderful insight section where there's a lot of content for people who are kind of asking these kinds of identity-related, storytelling-related questions. My TEDx talk, I'm very proud of and excited to share with the world.
I love that talk.
So, thank you so much.
If they don't want to know anything else, they just need to listen to your TED talk because it's
sexy. Yeah, vulnerability is sexy.
I mean,
all over.
That was the first time I saw you, and I went, "Wow, this guy is cool." Okay, anybody wears a T-shirt like that and talks like that, I want to hear more from him. So it is worth the TEDx talk is excellent and absolutely worth listening to.
Oh, that's so kind. Thank you, Mona.
Well, we are about out of time. Corey, I just want to say thank you for two things. One, for sharing your time, but more importantly, I think for sharing your passion with the world. We need more people like you out there, not only with individuals, but also companies, because when we bring our best, I think we all gain, not only individually as companies, but also in communities and society. So thank you for your willingness to share that and to, in so many ways, put yourself out there. We appreciate that.
Yes. Thank you for honoring my work. It's incredibly generous of you, and I'm just beaming with warmth in my heart. So thank you, Mona.
I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, Corey. Thank you so much.
And thank you.
Come back every Thursday right here, Core Dialogues Radio. We are at coredialogues.businessradiox.com. I always get a little bit tongue-twisted on that. And if you go to coredialoguesradio.com, you can listen to not only to Corey's piece here, but also to other interviews that we've done in the past several weeks. So again, please join us next week where we're always here with good conversation, things that will inspire you, things that will motivate you, and things that will really hope bring a different kind of conversation to the world. Thank you so much and have a great day.